reconvene the regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council for Tuesday, September 8, 2015. Would you all please stand with us for a moment of silence for the men and women who have given the ultimate sacrifice for this country? Thank you. Please remain standing as we move into our flag salute. And with school back in session, this is always one of the more fun parts for our meetings. We get the youth involved. So I want to call Gabriella Wise forward. Gabriella is 8 years old and a third grade student at Fairgrove Elementary School. She thinks math is fun to learn and she enjoys rounding numbers. Gabriella enjoys going to the park, swimming in the pool, the nice weather, and looking at the moon at night. Me too. She would like to be an artist, and she enjoys coloring, painting, sketching, and practicing art problems. Gabriella is accompanied this evening by, I believe her mom is here, and her teacher. So, Gabriella, whenever you're ready. And mom, sorry. Please come forward.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Congratulations. To the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. I have to thank you. Come on, come closer. Sorry about that, Gabriella. I want to make sure she gets a picture.
I definitely want to get this one. Smile for mom and baby. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Donna, when you're ready, roll call, please.
Here.
Thank you, Donna. Let's see, we have some closed session announcements we would like to make tonight. City Attorney, will you cover those, please?
On August the 17th, the council met in closed session regarding conference with real property negotiators under Government Code 54956.8, conference with labor negotiators under 54957.6, conference with real property negotiators related to the Pacifica companies, and conference with legal counsel on existing litigation under 54956.9 on the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus City of Santa Maria. Based on the deliberation and discussions in closed sessions, there were no reportable actions taken.
Thank you for that. All right. We are now going to move to our agenda review. This is when the council reviews the agenda as presented by staff and decides if we want to make any changes to the order of the items on the agenda. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda?
Okay, then I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. I believe there's some extra agendas on the back table. So we're going to move forward with our ceremonial calendar, and we have one item on that tonight, and this is a proclamation declaring September 2015 as Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. And do we have anyone here to accept the proclamation, Donna? Okay, so I will read this into the record and then you'll contact whomever to come pick this up. This is Cancer Connection Report. Cancer is the leading cause of death by disease among U.S. children between infancy and age 15. And this tragic disease is detected in more than 15,000 of our country's young people each and every year. And whereas one in five of our nation's children loses his or her battle with cancer, many infants, children, and teens will suffer from long-term effects of comprehensive treatment, including secondary cancers. And whereas founded over 20 years ago by Stephen Firestein, a member of the philanthropic Max Factor Cosmetics family, the American Cancer Fund for Children, Inc., and Kids Cancer Connection, Inc., are dedicated to helping these children and their families. And whereas the American Cancer Fund for Children and Kids Cancer Connection provide a variety of vital patient psychosocial services to children undergoing cancer treatment at Santa Barbara Cottage Children's Hospital, Children's Hospital Central Coast, the City of Hope, as well as participating hospitals throughout the country, their by enhancing the quality of life for these children and their families. And whereas the American Cancer Fund for Children and the Kids Cancer Connection also sponsor Courageous Kid Recognition Award ceremonies, community Get Well cards, and hospital celebrations in honor of a child's determination and bravery to fight the battle against childhood cancer. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim the month of September 2015 as Childhood Cancer Awareness Month in the City of Grover Beach. And the City Council encourages citizens to participate in childhood cancer awareness events and to join in efforts to end childhood cancer. If you have a chance to be involved to help make such difficult situations better for others, please do. Any council members want to make any comment on that? Okay. So we are now going to move into public communications. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. Please bear in mind that the council will listen to your comments, but we cannot take action on any item that is not on the agenda. So I do have, I believe, 4 or 5 speaker request slips tonight, and we're going to start with Carol Roberts. So Carol, please come forward.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. My name is Carol Roberts. I live at 1425 Trueville in Grover Beach, and I'm here as a representative of the Grover Beach community. A little bit of what we've done. We have a very active and diverse board of directors. We're adding 2 more this week, and we'll come to 13 directors, members of the community. We're well established as a full-service library with fiction, nonfiction, children, classics, and young adult sections, and we have youth and senior reading programs. We currently have over 10,000 books on our shelves, and 9,999 of them have been donated by generous contributions through the community. We have purchased a few specialized books, such as Spanish English or for teens or children, through fundraising and special grants that we've received from individuals. And other than that, we receive beautiful books from community donors. We have over 2,000 library card members that carry cards to our little library. And we're fully supported by an active volunteer librarian group. We pay no salaries. And thanks to the generosity of Clifford Clark and Marilee, while she was still living, we pay no rent. So that's been a wonderful gift to us from that family to keep our little library going. And we have a dues-paying Friends of the Library organization that helps support us, and we're well-funded and have a good residue for maintenance and upkeep. And today, thanks to PG&E, and your mayor was there wearing another hat, we received a check for $3,000 for a grant to purchase a book drop for the front of our library now, for since our hours are limited to afternoon hours, people can drop off due books at any time. So I just wanted to let you know that that's kind of where we stand at this point. Now we're working on getting ideas and working through the community to get a little more activity in the library and let everyone know we're there. We still have people come in every week saying, I didn't know we had a library in Grover Beach. So, you know, we need to get the word out, and we're grateful for your support all through the time, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol, and I just want to say that you, the board of directors, and the volunteers have done a great job with the library and make us so proud that we've got this wonderful jewel in the heart of Grover Beach. So tell everyone, keep up the great work. And actually, I think I need to renew my Friend of the Library card.
Thank you. Now, those are our new brochures. We just updated those and had them out, and you'll see our new little bookmarks, and keep them handy and share them.
And I just wanted to say, and you can repeat it after me if you like, that if you don't know where the library is, it's at 240 North 9th Street in Grover Beach, obviously right next to Ramona Garden Park. So,
Yeah, we're part of Ramona Garden Park. We have the front part of Clifford Clark's old law offices there, and we've been there now 10 years in that building. And someday we'll probably expand and take over more of that space. But right now we're in the front half of that and open 5 days a week. So,
very
thank
good.
You. 240 North 9th. Thank you.
Any comments to my left? Ma'am?
Any questions?
Sure.
We love the library. we were in the summer reading program.
Read early, read often, right?
I wasn't in the reading program, but I did walk someone there quite a bit. So.
Nice. Thank you, Tara.
Thank you.
We have Judy Park.
Mr. Mayor, council members. I'm Judy Parks from Grover Beach, and last several meetings we sincerely appealed to you all not to approve the proposed 10 per week mile-long toxic and deadly Phillips 66 crude tar sands oil trains to pass through our area and expose 97,000 residents to the blast zone, to predictable derailments and explosions. Even our Department of Transportation projects 10 such accidents per year in the country. This oil is to ultimately ship to Asia. We implore you to vote no against this deadly proposal and urge the Planning Commission to vote no also. Thank you for your responsible action on your voters' behalf.
Thank you, Ms. Barnes. Mr. Mark Nelson.
Thank you, Mayor Scholes, and thank you, City Council members, for this opportunity. I'm aware that on the agenda next meeting will be the Phillips 66 project, but recently the Telegram Tribune came out with an editorial and took a position on this, and that's rare for them. They rarely take a position on a business proposition, and I just want to read their short editorial to you. The headline was, "Routing oil trains through densely populated California towns is a bad idea." And I'll go on with the article, or the editorial. We aren't fans of the NIMBYs, if you don't know if that's an acronym for not in my backyard. We're not fans of the NIMBYs. Too often we've seen it used by self-interested individuals who don't want to share their roads, schools, parks, and playgrounds with newcomers. However, when it comes to the railroad spur proposed by the Santa Maria Refinery on the Napoma Mesa, it's understandable that communities throughout California would not want a facility that will bring more oil trains, as many as 5 per week, each with approximately 80 to 120 tank cars through their neighborhoods. With the possible exception of Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, we can't recall a single project in San Luis Obispo County that's been so negatively received. The Tribune reported in July that more than 40, and it's growing, government agencies and public officials in the state have opposed this project. This is not an overreaction by tree-hugging, left-leaning, anti-business environmentalists. It's an effort by normal families to keep their communities out of harm's way, a reasonable response, we believe, given what's been happening in the oil industry around this country. As oil production in North Dakota and Canada took off, shipments of crude oil by rail have increased dramatically, as have derailments and explosions. In 2010, there were 9 accidents in the United States involving oil railroad tank cars. In 2014, there were 143. That does not include the 2013 crash in Canada that killed 47 people. Can't happen here? Consider this piece of not-so-ancient history. August 11, 1986, a train carrying highly flammable isobutene derailed in Grover Beach, forcing the evacuation of 2,000 people. Had one of those tank cars leaked, there could have been a fiery explosion. We acknowledge that the risk of repeat occurrence is slight, but still, we cannot, in good conscience, support the Phillips 66 rail spur project. The plant safety record is not at issue here. It's the record of the railroad industry that's in question, and as statistics show, that's been far from blameless. There have been efforts to improve safety, and that's good, but they've been long in coming, and they have not been successful. For example, an oil train that derailed and caught fire in West Virginia in February of this year involved newer model tank cars supposedly designed to be less susceptible to puncture. We support the Santa Maria Refinery, and we believe that it can remain in business for many years to come. But when it was built in the early 1930s, its mission was to process oil from the surrounding communities. But allowing it to morph into a receiving site for oil trains that originate from far away and pass through communities, colleges, Little League baseball fields surrounded by millions of people is haphazard planning, and it defies logic. As a recent editorial in the San Jose Mercury News asked... So,
Mr. Nelson, are you almost... I've given you extra time. I need you to wrap up.
Thank you very much. I'm almost done here. They just go on to say it's a bad idea. We strongly urge our county officials to make their objections known to the San Luis Obispo Planning Commission. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. I believe Pastor Don.
Mayor Scholes, council members, I want to thank you for past support for our endeavors. However, this time it's a kind of a more personal matter. I bought a home 4 years ago on Saratoga Avenue. Nobody told me it was going to be a truck route next on my street. Atlantic City, Newport, and Saratoga. On my street, I have anywhere from 5 to 15 huge semis going in and out of that road. It is not a commercial road. It is a residential street. I've called the police, and they're probably very tired of hearing from me about this matter. For one thing, the truck routes are not marked out, and the streets are not marked where you cannot have an overweight condition on those streets. 3 tons on a residential street. Grant you, if a commercial vehicle has to deliver or pick up at a residential unit, that is always permitted, never has been. But when I talked to the police department and they said, well, our hands are tied, the truckers say that they're legal to do it whenever they want to. So I pulled up the city of Grover Beach truck route. And it's all outlined except for one little part that's been put in. It says, trucks that exceed the maximum gross weight are permitted ingress and egress by direct route to and from restricted streets when necessary for the purpose of making pickups and deliveries of goods. So basically what they told the truckers is, we have truck routes, but you don't have to pay any attention to them. You can go where you want to go. And that's exactly what they're doing. On my street, we have children and pets playing. One day you're going to see somebody killed. They can't, those big trucks can't see them, and kids run out, unfortunately. When they go down the street, there's no room for another car to come beside, and they have to wait. And the worst part is, this city has streets that are crumbling underneath us. And by allowing these behemoths to ride on residential streets, it's tearing those streets up. It costs twice as much to replace a street that has been worn down by overweight than it does to make that street in the first place. Truck route streets. And I was a public works inspector for the city of St. Louis, and this was my job, to oversee the building of streets. Those streets are completely different. When they put in the base material, there's twice as much base material. It has to be compacted in several layers. The asphalt is twice as thick and has to be put in layers. The rock is bigger in those. When you destroy a street by running big trucks on a residential area, you not only, you're threatening the safety of those people in the community, but you're tearing those streets down completely. It's crushing and tearing that base material completely out. And I just kind of like to see that stop. It isn't necessary for them. Ramona is a truck route. It's 3 blocks from me. But as long as they have this on their deal and the streets aren't marked, they're going to keep doing it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else that would like to address the council? Please come forward.
Not even my song. Right. I was shocked when I got this letter that you're going to write a letter to Caltrans. Thanks a lot. Because just a few weeks ago, city attorney wrote a letter to me and said that no crosswalks allowed on Oak Park because of the Warner 2008. And everybody I've talked to, this is 2015. Where's he at? You know, I talked about this. And my nephew came up with a bumper sticker. It says, slow people move to the right. So I told him I want a 2x2, but I'm putting it on my tailgate. But there's more to it. because it goes 6-7 times to San Luis Potato Farm, Chevron, to check those heifers, because I want to save every calf I can get so I can pay taxes for the California. And so as I was going up there, I always pass everybody on the right because the three lanes there from Avila to Spyglass. Come home, got to watch the news, and here's Shelley, Mayor Hickenbach from Piedmont. Oh, everybody's going to work. That's why it's so full, bumper to bumper. Showed cars up. So next day, I called. I said, I'd like to talk to Shelley, because not everybody's going to work. Those women that's got their feet up on the dashboard and the kids are looking and taking pictures aren't going to work in St. Louis. Are they? And so.
Hey, John, I don't mean to interrupt you. You know we have this item actually on the agenda.
On what?
It's on the agenda later, but
yeah.
I'll allow you to.
Shelley called me at 6 o'clock, talked for 20 minutes. I said, you know, you're breaking all the rules and regulations. Because politicians don't talk that long. They give you 3 minutes and that's it. You're out. But she won't know where in the hell I came from. And I told her. I've been here 60 years almost. So anyway, I talked to the three churches there on Oak Park. And they would like to see something done about a crosswalk. Because on Newport, they come down the hill and there's no crosswalk. Kids are going to school now. But so I went to Roy Grant. I attended 3 meetings over there. And boy, that's first class. You gotta go see 2 women there and I'll talk to guys. So I told them about the situation. 75-80% of the people in Grover spend their money over there. And I said, it's been that way for a long time. We only have Chevron and Bomb. But you're lucky you got Bombs, because that Mr. Hager, if he'd got that, that store would have been closed, just like Las Osas. So you're lucky you got that to have some sales tax. So anyway, they said they'd talk about that Oak Park, and they wanted the city manager, the new one, to come in before they did anything. And then I got a wide open eyes last week. Yeah. Here comes the Cal Portland there. 2 salts right across your house to my house. I said, what the hell's going on here? You're supposed to be filling potholes. There's not a pothole. Oh, we're going to put a new water line. Oh, going to move the water meter out. Oh, I didn't hear that. I didn't vote for that. I voted for potholes, I thought. But I voted against it because I knew there'd be problems. So anyway, I don't understand why you have to do that just to 3 residents when it wasn't on the list. It was vote to fill the potholes. You know, I'm in my 80s, but boy, I have a hard time understanding things.
Thank you, John. Is there anyone else?
21st as directed by the council.
Okay, very good. And then the perhaps we can, maybe you can coordinate on the truck routes. I know that we have a map that designates truck routes, and there was some language that was given, so I'm, you know, maybe look into that and work with the resident.
Yes, you know, I'll provide the resident with my card, and I'm sure that myself and the police chief will be glad to meet with him and talk about enforcement.
Okay.
And truck routes.
And then I think there was a reference to Brighton, and maybe just give you an opportunity to share with the community again what's going on with Brighton and why the water line and things
Brighton,
like that.
Brighton, one of the things that we're trying to do as we repair these streets is to deal with issues underneath the streets just in that one section. And then obviously we'll be following that up with a complete pavement of the street. I will note that, you know, the city is available. If someone has questions about any of the improvements, they should call Public Works.
Jeff, did you have something? Oh, okay. I thought I saw you move a little bit. All right. So we're going to move into our public hearing items tonight. This is item number 2 on the agenda if you are following along. This is introduction and first reading of an ordinance repealing Chapter 16 of Article 2 of the Grover Beach Municipal Code, Residency Requirements. And I believe this staff report is going to be given by City Attorney Hill. Is that correct?
I think I'm going to defer this to the chief.
Yeah, you guys are going to have to. Chief, are you giving the staff report?
Are you giving the staff report on the 290?
I was not.
Okay. I'll advise you on what Martin and I talked about. In the context of your ordinance in creating spacing regulations for those individuals who are under Penal Code 290 are required to register as sex offenders and therefore are required or have limitations based on your ordinance in terms of where they can reside, you were sued. And as a consequence of that litigation, there was a settlement agreement, and that settlement included the repeal of this particular ordinance. What functionally that amounts to is that at this point in time, your regulations would be essentially those of state statutes. Those are in a flux at the moment. Penal Code 3003.5.
This is taking away the 2,000-foot rule, which was ruled unconstitutional in 2014 in a local case, as well as in 2015. So we're just going to be going back to assimilating the state law, which is currently in place, and we already enforce that state law.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Any questions of staff? Anything to my right? No questions? Councilmember Wright.
So then, and excuse me, thank you. In state law, then, is there some sort?
And the latest one came down in March of 2015. So we were not actively enforcing that portion of the ordinance. That actually had been stopped since July of 2014 by Chief Copsey under direction. And so that portion of the ordinance was basically being stayed mm-hmm. until the court resolution came about. And the court resolution came about in March of this year, and then
I see.
Unfortunately, litigation came right after that.
Gotcha. So. I understand now. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
I just wanted to, I think I heard your answer right, but so now under state law, there's no restriction as far as residency? Is that what you said?
There's no restrictions in distance as far as residency. There's still residency requirements or registration requirements if anybody moves into the city or if they change addresses. But there's no restrictions on the 2,000-foot rule from schools and parks and so forth.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay.
That just did bring up one question for me, and just more of a clarification, is when we initially passed this ordinance, we were in compliance with state law, and then there was a series of cases that came about that then brought into question the distance, in which case that sounds about the time that former Chief Copsey started the non-enforcement of that portion of that. Is that correct?
That is correct. It was in compliance with Jessica's law when we first enacted it, and then the 2014 case, which was out of Orange County in the district court there, when that case came down, that's when we issued a stay of the execution of the 2,000-foot rule, and then after the 2015 court ruling came down, then that's where we have to repeal that portion.
So okay. We were in compliance when we passed the ordinance, and this is to clear up things from that point.
Okay, very good. This is a public hearing item. Do any members of the public want to speak on this item? I don't have any speaker request forms, but please come forward. Yes.
Hi, as Grandma here, I just wanted to know how many are violators and residing in our city.
Okay. Can you identify yourself for us, please?
Andrea C. Strand, Grover Beach.
Thank you, Andrea.
51 North Fifth Street.
Very good. Is there anyone else? I think Ms. Brown's got a hand up. Is there a mic that we can take to her?
Thank you. Sharon Brown, resident of Grover Beach. I'm distressed to hear that we're essentially ignoring public safety, perhaps. And they're all that they do report that. Who enforces that? Who's responsible for tracking that?
Okay, very good. Is there anyone else that would like to make a comment on this item? Seeing no one come forward, let me close it to the public. And Chief, can you come back up? And I think this is going to have to be a team effort, a collaborative effort in answering some of the questions that have come up. So who wants to start?
Well, I can answer those. Currently in the city of Grover Beach, we have 18 registered sex offenders. And the Grover Beach Police Department is responsible for the enforcement action of any violations of that ordinance. Those violations could be folks that fail to register upon moving here, those that fail to register upon their annual re-registration date, as well as those who don't register registrants throughout the year. And so he's very familiar with the folks that are required to register and helps them stay within compliance.
Okay, very good. Any other questions of staff? Okay, some discussion on this item? No? No one? It's okay. Someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll move staff's recommendation. Do we need to read the whole recommendation? I will just in case.
Our police force and other law enforcement agencies will continue to track and be vigilant. So I think with that, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, let's move on to our consent agenda. This is a agenda where we take routine items. They are listed as a group. And do any members of the council, well, let me see how many items we've got on consent tonight. Looks like there's actually three, maybe. Is there four, Bob? Okay. There's a treasurer's report for the period of August 11th through September 1st, 2015. There's a treasurer's report for the streets bond account, which is Measure K-14. That's also from August 11th to September 1st. There are minutes of the city council meeting on August 3rd. And then there is a item in which the city council, in its capacity as successor agency to the dissolved Grover Beach Improvement Agency, and that is adoption of a recognized obligation payment schedule for January 1st, 2016 to June 30th, 2016. And do any members of the council want to remove any item from the consent agenda?
And okay. A philosophical question on 3 and 4 for our
okay.
City manager.
You have the floor.
And actually maybe for our for Ms. Chapman as well, but it's more along the lines of with our new software system, and I'm not sure where that stands in place of being implemented. Are these treasurer's reports being prepared in that system or under our old system?
Good evening, City Council. Gayla Chapman, Administrative Services Director. Currently, everything is being conducted in the old system. We are still in the process of setting up the new system. Last week, we did some background setup that needs to be completed, which is some default setup. I've got other setups that I'm going to be completing this week, and we still have user setup for the individual users, which it's all very time consuming, unfortunately, and we are doing it in our spare time and taking extra time and working late to get some of this done, but we are slowly making progress and hopefully we'll have the first module on.
Will that module be used to produce this report?
The report is actually produced in Word. We have to put it together individually. No, I do not believe that the system would put the reports together in the manner we would want to see them in.
But what I think you're saying is it'll be used to generate the information
yes.
that will in turn be
yes.
used to do the
report.
The work report.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Those are your questions? Okay. So if there are no other questions and no one wants to pull any items from consent, I'll accept a motion.
I'll move that we approve the consent calendar.
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion on the motion, this will be a roll call vote.
Yes.
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 Yes, thank you, Donna. All right, let's move on to our regular business tonight. This is item number 7, and this is a request from the Central Coast Taxpayers Association to oppose Senate Constitution Amendment SCA 5. City Manager Peralt.
Yes. Also the vice president of the Local Taxpayers Association actually approached the council and asked the council to take a position in opposition to SCA 5. SCA 5 is currently pending in the legislature. I've indicated in the report a little bit about the SCA 5. Ultimately, in order for the SCA 5 to be approved, it would require a two-thirds approval by both houses of the legislature, state legislature, and then it would proceed to the state ballot. So it has yet a long ways to go, but the assessing requires the assessment of commercial and industrial properties. It would essentially require that over a two-year period, commercial and industrial properties would be reassessed to current market level. It would provide a tangible personnel property exemption for equipment for tax purposes for small businesses, and that exemption would be up to $500,000. This would not impact residential assessments. They would stay as they currently are under Proposition 13. It would also establish certain funds within the Treasury. I noticed that there was a special college fund and a community college fund and an education fund, and I think also a mental health services fund. What was unclear to me in reading the legislation is to what extent, if the reassessment occurred, would there actually be a benefit to Grover Beach? There is some discussion regarding a potential distribution of taxes, but it's very hard to determine what that would be. Consequently, I've attached the legislation in its entirety. Staff is available to answer any questions you might have. Ms. Seastrand, I'm sure, is in the audience as well. And that concludes staff's report.
Very good. Thank you, Bob. Any questions of staff? To anyone to my left?
Well, I have questions. I'm not sure if anyone can answer them, but I'll ask, because I just feel like I'm missing some data and numbers on this, and I don't know if anyone has these numbers. But how many businesses in Grover Beach would potentially be affected by this? If we have any estimate of how many of our businesses might be under-assessed right now, and maybe any estimate of businesses that are currently paying an equipment tax, which would now be waived, because I'm just wondering if maybe our tax, we would lose tax money this way, or... Mm-hmm. I know in reading through the materials provided, they discuss one way that businesses become underassessed is through sales and complicating their sales and with a 50% ownership. And I just wondered if there were other ways businesses were becoming underassessed. Because it might be easier to close loopholes than to change a constitution. And if I know in reading through this that a lot of the money would go to education, but it was unclear how much would go to the Lucia Marr School District, because it seemed to be based on the provision of free lunches and things of that nature. So I wasn't even sure if we could estimate that amount. So those are my questions. I don't know if anyone has any answers to those.
Okay. So you want to,
well,
Bob?
About the only thing that I can really comment on, those are some very specific questions. I can tell you the city, as we all know, is heavily residential. I think the residential properties probably make up close to 80% of our accessible properties. Mm-hmm. Track anything in terms of which businesses have personal, equipment, that tangible equipment that might have an exemption. Perhaps the Board of Equalization may track that, but it is beyond our scope at this present time in bringing this information to you.
Okay, very good. Any other questions? Mayor Pro Tem?
Just had one, and I think Councilmember Shaw expressed my thoughts in a much better way than I was going to be able to. I know that for certain. And I'm not sure if this is going to be Bob or Ms. Seastrand. Again, with a philosophical question, is realizing that the girls' restaurant in Arroyo Grande has indicated that their rent tripled over for whatever reason. And I'm wondering if Ms. Seastrand knows if a reassessment of that property may have played into that that rent increase, realizing there's lots of other business decisions for that, but that might be a specific local example if she's aware of that, that I may not be.
Okay. Councilmember Nichols, anything?
Nothing.
Okay. I don't have any questions. I think I see she's been referred to numerous times, so let me open this up to the public.
Thank you, and I appreciate putting this on the agenda and having a discussion on it. I appreciate your questions. I'm flying at a 60,000-foot level here. Basically, philosophically, the attempt to undermine and dismantle Prop 13. Last session round, they had some 6 to 7 constitutional amendments coming from the Senate and the Assembly, such as, I don't think they ever introduced the split roll, but that's where the state legislature wants to go. And if it doesn't pass this time, it will be back. They just will be bringing it back and back. Prop 13, as you know, has been around for 40 years. I may not look it, but I was one of those that passed the petitions around to make sure that it got on the ballot and was overwhelmingly passed by the voters of the state. And I think that enough surveys have been taken and polling that the people still are very, very much concerned about Prop 13. And I think we hear it mostly on the residential side to keep people in their homes. But I want to remind you that California is the highest taxed state in the union. And if you don't think that California, the state legislature, has enough money of 167 point something billion dollars and concentrate on our roads and streets or any other type situations, this is just, I always tell this to people, I served in the state assembly so many years ago, and it's gone, I think, maybe even a little worse. There's never enough money. You here have to account to the local people here and how you spend money. They're, I don't know, except for Dan Walters, I don't know what else comes across in the news as to what they're doing up there. But they're spending dollars. The choo-choo train to nowhere, I bet if you took a poll in Grover Beach, people would say, what are we doing? That's what, $80, $100 billion? Poof, again, I don't know, studies and so on. So I'm just telling you, this split roll tax is the first attempt, or one of many attempts, in Sacramento to do in the businesses in the state of California. And I think if you were to talk to business people in this city, they would probably tell you they're being taxed a great amount of money. And while it may be, I don't know what exactly in Grover Beach, but when we think about those big corporations do employ people, the Lockheed Martins and so on, they do employ and provide jobs in this state. And we don't, I know, I'm very familiar with the aerospace industry, and they've left long ago, to other places that are favorable. You've heard about Governor Perry coming here from Texas and so on, wooing businesses to Texas. So I would just say that just so you know, the Central Coast Taxpayers Association has approached the Board of Supervisors. They passed a resolution opposing SCA 5. We also approached all of the 7 cities, trying to educate the policymakers like yourself of what this would mean to the state of California and eventually to our small community, our city here in Grover Beach. So on that, it was mentioned that the League of City hasn't taken a position. And that's important. I know how important and how big and credible the League of Cities is in Sacramento. And they need to hear that cities such as you are opposed to the attack on Prop 13. And Mayor Scholz, I'll be at the SLOCOG meeting talking about the other attack, ACA4, which is trying to reduce the vote from two-thirds to 55% to raise taxes. So this is all coming together, and when you see and you get the picture of what they're trying to do, I just say enough is enough. And thank you for your consideration. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else that would like to address the item before us? And did you have a question for Andrea?
One more question.
Sorry.
Sure. Sorry about that. I apologize.
No, that was I didn't recognize it, so that's on.
You mentioned loopholes with regards to the transfer or sale of commercial properties. Is that something that the Taxpayer Association is going to take up next, or where do you stand?
Well, you know, it was interesting because the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association went on record last session to support a bill such as this, and many of the other entities joined that fight. But it was interesting because the majority in the legislature didn't vote for it. They voted it down. I don't know why. I wasn't there, but my thinking is, are they going after this to try to still keep going on Prop 13 and give an argument? But that was a bill last time around, and the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association definitely tried to close that loophole, and it wasn't successful.
Okay, very good. I think I saw Ms. Brown raise her hand.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sharon Brown. I read through this twice online. I got so confused, so muddled. It was so convoluted. I got mixed messages. And it made me ask the question, what is the true purpose of this legislation, and why should it be in the Constitution? The Constitution is yay thick, from what I understand, in many books. And once it goes into the Constitution, it doesn't come back out. Senator Holly Mitchell, who represents fringe areas all around LA, both of which are in very, very poor areas. They would really benefit. Their schools could benefit from this kind of legislation. But is this the proper forum in order to bring about those kinds of changes? How much revenue will this raise? Does the $500,000 exemption for the property, and from what I understand, it is not exclusively for business purposes, does that leave another loophole? Could private vehicles be leased to the company and then used privately? What added burdens will this place on county assessors, school districts, individual schools, and at what cost? How can those costs be recovered? I think I will conclude with that.
In other
words, I don't think that we can certainly support it. I don't know if we actually know enough to say hands down on it either. But I certainly don't think we should support it.
Okay, very good. Was there someone else that wants to speak?
Because she's been up there. But to me, and my knowledge, California politics is poor management. Because if I operated like California, I would be sleeping under the bridge. The poor manager.
Thank you, John. Okay, seeing no one else come forward, I'm going to close this to the public, bring it back to the council for some discussion. Who wants to start? Mayor Pro Tem?
I'll go ahead and throw my two cents out there. I did read all of that, and as Ms. Brown mentioned, it's a very confusing document. So welcome to legislation, I'm guessing. So from the perspective of what this does to us locally, I did reach out to a couple business owners and didn't have success in getting information from them as to how they thought it would impact them, but the information as to what the money going up towards the state coffers versus what potentially could stay here would be why I'd be supportive of writing a letter in opposition to the amendment.
Okay, very good. Anyone else?
I agree, but you said that very eloquently.
You did.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Okay.
You made my point.
Well, actually, just to add to this, it is poorly written legislation, and quite honestly, we don't trust the state legislators as well. I mean, we're still reeling from the dissolution of redevelopment. We know we need to reassess revenue generation, but not creating split tax rolls or dismantling Prop 13. I know that it was tough seeing some of the gimmicks that led to the marginalization of the vehicle license fee, which had a direct effect on us. And I agree with you all that given the way this is written, that I would have trouble supporting this and could certainly say oppose as written. So I think we're all on the same wavelength. And so does someone want to try and form a motion on this?
I'll try. And I'm going to say that we asked staff to draft a letter opposing the bill or opposing it as written and authorize the mayor to execute the letter on behalf of the city.
I second that.
Okay, very good. And if that is the...
And I'm sure the city manager will craft this into the letter, addressing our specific, how we were unsure how it would specifically impact us, but we feel that it might monetarily...
I don't know enough about this to support it or not support it. And I know that Ms. Seastrand is here on a, as she said, her 60,000 foot level in defense of Proposition 13, but I feel I'm up here to, worry about how things right now are going to affect Grover Beach. And I just don't think this gives us enough information to know how it would affect Grover Beach. So I would say as written, because I'm not doing it on a philosophical level. I'm doing it on a concrete level.
Okay. And then I would say, since we do have a motion on the floor, and this is really good, healthy discussion, that I will certainly work with, I believe the city manager is capturing all of our comments, and he and I will work together to make sure that this letter is crafted to address the points that have been made by us. And communicate that to the legislature. Okay? So with that, I think we can just do this on a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for your comments and discussion on that. So let's move to item number, I believe this is item number 8. This is an authorization to send a letter to Caltrans regarding signage on US 101. City Manager Peralt.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, again at a recent meeting, the issue of traffic delays on US 101 was brought up, and it was pointed out to the council at the time that those delays occurred on a stretch of US 101 from essentially San Luis Obispo down to the Oak Park exit in Grover Beach. The individual who raised that issue indicated that, as has been said, that one alternative would be to improve the signage along US 101 to ensure or direct people to move to the right and use the right lane for slower traffic, as we've seen elsewhere. Obviously, the solution to bottlenecking in that corridor would probably be an increase in capacity. It's been talked about, I know, at SLOCOG. Obviously, there are no dollars available to undertake that kind of a project at the present time. So staff, following council's direction, has crafted the the attached letter to the local or to the District 5 director of Caltrans, indicating that in the interim, additional signage should be placed on both the north and south side or north and south lanes of the freeway. That concludes staff's report. I'm available to answer any questions that you might have.
Very good. Nice staff report. Any questions of staff? None to my right, to my left? Okay. Let me open this up to the public. Is there anyone that would like to address this, the item before the council? I see Ms. Brown's raising her hand. Where is my mic?
I'm just not sure what kind of signs we are going to have or where the strategic placement would be. I mean, what are we recommending? And one of the things I've noticed as I have been caught several times in this mess, and the times vary, actually, so I'm not always sure that it is just work traffic, but it's people changing lanes. All of a sudden, you know, you come down off the three lanes into two lanes, and they're out in the outside lane, and they say, oops, there's my exit, or I better try to move over. And so we have all this lane changing, or the reverse of that is the lane changing the other way. I need to be in the fast lane. So to me, that's part of the problem. So those are my questions.
Okay, very good.
John, the mayor of Pismo Shelby said she had to bring it before the city council. The same thing over Roy Granby. They had to bring it before the city council, and they had to wait for the city manager. So I think you'd have a whole lot of pressure and leverage if the three of you went together and said, hey, look, our people here suffer from 101. And I don't care where you go outside California.
Years ago, when they put in this climbing lane, myself, then Mayor Ferraro of Rio Grande, and Mayor Reese of Pismo Beach expressed our real concerns that instead they've created a situation where it is a bottleneck, because you can literally, if you drive that, it goes anywhere from, when cars are coming onto 101, you're literally going four lanes wide, eventually down to two. So it is an issue. I think there are some ways that this can be helped, and so maybe as we go forward with a letter, I would think we want to expand it. One, complete the auxiliary lane so that it goes from Avalon Beach Drive to Spyglass. Two, I think there does need to be some signage that talks about slow traffic moving to the right lane, which is obviously current state law. The third would be no stopping on the shoulder. I cannot begin to tell you how many times driving that stretch, and I drive it two and three times a day, folks see the ocean for the first time, and I was just, the first time I saw this happen, I was just really flabbergasted that someone pulled over on the shoulder to take a photo. I mean, I think there's got to be a way to say no parking unless it's an emergency. So there is some signage lacking. I was going to go down the road to say, and we want more signage to say Grover Beach, but we fought for that many years ago, and we got a couple, so I'm going to leave it at that. But I do think the other thing in this letter, we do want to talk about a better enforcement, continue to work with Mayor Higginbotham, Mayor Hill, and Mr. Guthrie to do what we need to do to advocate to Caltrans. So anyone else?
I like the direction you're going in. I was wondering if we wanted to add a sentence or two with regards to the slow cog. I don't know what the actual physical name of it is, but basically the corridor study that they're
good point.
Currently in phase two of, which I think that section is the number one priority in that.
Okay.
In that, so we might want to add that to that.
I think it's a great addition. Mm-hmm. Barbara, anything?
The other thing that contributes to the backlog coming southbound is right where the climbing lane blends in, there's also an on-ramp.
Yep.
So either close the on-ramp or extend the lane.
Agreed.
Yeah, that makes very good sense. As someone who travels that all the time, although I really have change my route completely so I don't have to go that way, because it is such a mess and accidents and people stopping on the side of the road, and then people are driving and they have to stop to see or slow down to see what they've stopped for. It's crazy. So any improvement there, I think, would be a plus.
Okay. Miriam?
No, I agree with all the suggestions, and I really like bulking up the letter, because if we're going to write something, let's have some good suggestions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I used to drive it 4 times a day, but I don't do it, and my parents go to Costco for me, so I'll leave it to you guys.
Okay, very good. Does anyone?
I do have a question.
Yes.
I'm not familiar with it backing up other than just heavier, slow traffic so far as being northbound, like in the 8th to late.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad. It starts at, recently it's starting at Oak Park and sometimes continues all the way around the Shell Beach curve. It's just crazy.
I think the base letter to the city manager, and then I think there were 5 or 6 points, and again, I'll work with the city manager. So there is a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that fabulous motion.
He's on a roll tonight. That's nice. All right, so we've got a motion and a second. No additional discussion. I think we can do this with a voice vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries.
Go through, and essentially resolutions are proposed by the league membership for presentation at the General Assembly at the league's annual conference in which will take place in San Jose at the end of September. The purpose of this review is to review the recommended resolutions that will be discussed at the General Assembly. And it gives the council the opportunity to provide a direction in terms of voting to your primary delegate, which is the mayor, and your alternates, which I believe in this case are Councilmember Shaw and Councilmember Nichols, in the event that the mayor is unable to attend the General Assembly. So essentially you have 4 resolutions that are presented, and just to highlight them briefly. One is a recommended change to the league bylaws. This is probably more administrative in nature, but it deals with streamlining the selection process in light of the need to occasionally fill a vacancy at the league at the board level. Number 2 is a resolution regarding a over-concentration or expressing concern regarding the over-concentration of alcohol and drug treatment facilities. As you'll remember, the city is actually precluded from actually weighing in on certain facilities if they are 6 residents or less. Yeah, but there is some concern that from time to time these are locating in our residential neighborhoods. Number 3 is residential rentals. This is really about legislation creating a tool to ensure that cities have the ability to collect TOT from vacation rentals. And number 3 is compensation for prolonged electrical power outages that may occur. So those are the resolutions. In detail, they've been attached, and my suggestion is that the council, by consensus, review each of these items and by consensus give direction to your delegate.
Thank you, Bob. And so I think you're right. We should go one by one. I will want everyone to know that given my current appropriate for me sitting in this chair to do that. Okay. So let's move to item number 1, and this is regarding league bylaw amendments. So anyone have any thoughts on that one?
I think City Manager Perrault gave a kind of a good description of that. It's administrative. It's happened twice in the last 5 years, and this provides a mechanism. So I'd actually be in support of that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everyone in agreement on that?
Yeah.
Okay. I duly note that. Say, let's move on to number two. And this is the one regarding the overconcentration of alcohol in treatment, drug treatment facilities. Discussion. Councilmember Nichols.
This one really concerns me. I think there's a huge issue around it. As far as the overconcentration, I think a lot of that has to do with housing costs in the area. If you are running a private group home or a private facility, there are only so many areas that you can really afford to have these houses, which does tend to create a little bit of concentration. However, if they're treated equally as far as distance between residences and so that it doesn't give a neighborhood a, as it refers to in the descriptions here, a institutional look. Just like you don't want a city where only families with five children can live in this neighborhood. You don't want a neighborhood that has nothing but group homes.
That's true.
I believe, though, that this particular, at least what I read of what I gleaned from it, is that
and they don't talk to each other. The state doesn't talk to this county, which doesn't talk to the city.
Okay. Anything else, Jeff?
I think what struck me about this is I think one of our public commenters today discussed NIMBY, and I just think it's funny that Malibu is the one just bringing up this huge issue. And this just rubbed me the wrong way. I know of at least two of these such homes in my neighborhood, and they have zero impact. So I don't know. I'm not really. I guess one question I would have for the city manager is, I know that we don't have zoning laws that would govern facilities like this that would be six people or under. But let's say there was such a facility in your neighborhood and it was a disruption. I mean, what recourse would a city have, or what recourse would residents have a recourse?
Well, I'll ask for the city attorney to amplify, but from my perspective, the recourse would be to communicate with the state agencies that are responsible for oversight.
That's one approach that you can take. The other is that you always have the ability, in terms of judicial recourse, to sue for public nuisance. If your neighbor is conducted, you can file your own action in the context over the neighbors for a public nuisance to shut them down or get an injunction against them if they're doing something like throwing parties or exceeding the six individuals. You're correct. Under state law, we can't regulate a group home of six individuals or less. But if they happen to have 12 individuals in that house and they're only regulated for six, you could see not only regulatory action but also potentially injunction action.
Thank you. So I'm not in support of this one.
Okay. So I think what we're hearing is, does this really add a lot more value to what we can already do? Because I think the league, even when I read on page 12 where the league talks about existing league policy and it talks about supporting, permitting cities to exercise review and land use regulation of group home facilities and residential care facilities in neighborhoods, including zoning, building, and some, the league actually does talk about supporting a minimum distance of 300 feet. So I think we have the ability to regulate. I think this is also another situation of one size does not fit all. And so I'm okay. If we if your direction is that we vote in opposition to this proposed legislation.
Do we vote in opposition, or do we just not take a position?
Well, there's more than one way. That's true. That's another way to look at it.
And we did have there was an issue. Actually, there have been a couple of issues since I've sat on this council, where folks have come to the council because they've had issues with. Residential. So I think that I don't know. I don't know that I would want to actually support this, but I think I would probably just not want to take a. Personally, I wouldn't want to take a position at this point in time.
So is the direction to remain neutral?
I'll be Switzerland.
If that's where the council majority wants to go, I will be more than happy to represent that position at the annual conference.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm flipping through my book here, and I'm not finding the page, but don't we have a page? I think we have
page 9.
Six different levels or something of choice, don't we? Or, no, isn't there, we're supposed to vote approve or... Disapprove or no action?
Is that all there is?
Yeah.
All right.
I think
that's
on page 5.
Okay. So I think we're doing good.
Okay.
So let's go to item resolution number 3. This is residential rentals, and this is support for SB 593. Who wants to jump into the water first on this one? Councilmember Shaw.
I would be in favor of this one, just having sat on the Visit Flow board and seeing how important TOT is. I also have been reading many articles about this phenomenon, and you know, when you want to talk about things that disrupt a neighborhood, someone said suitcases roll past my window every, you know, 2 days, and it's, you know how it is when you're a tourist coming in and packing up your car, and I think that's very disruptive. And then to not only have that disruption, but your city is not even getting any money for it, I think that's kind of a shame.
Well, it becomes not even a private residence anymore. It becomes a business.
And I agree with both of those perspectives. However, and the city manager can correct me if I'm wrong, but we actually don't have a policy for vacation rentals. So, while I think this is probably a worthwhile discussion to have, it's not going to have any impact on what we as a city do. And so, from that perspective, until we got the vacation ordinance or something like that, I would say no position from our perspective. But I mean, from a global discussion, us moving in the direction of that, I'd be willing to support it from that perspective. But how it impacts us directly would be not at this time.
Yeah, all very good discussion, and I was thinking that I was actually going to take the opposite view. I think we should weigh in on this, because I was going to say it's probably time for us to take up this issue again in our community. And I've been reluctant to bring it up, because we know the voters have said priorities for us are streets, water, and I'm going to throw in the beachfront lodge or economic development. So I think we are moving forward with streets, and this is something that we should maybe bring back.
I would agree with that. I mean, because I know the voters have said those are priorities, but I know even when I was gathering signatures, this vacation rental issue, people mentioned to me multiple times. So people are thinking about it.
Okay. So I think it would be wise maybe us to support this, knowing that looking toward the future that we're going to have this conversation again. Right.
I can support that.
Okay. So I think we have a consensus on that. And then on item number 4, for those who don't know, I work, my day job, I guess, is with PG&E, doing government relations. And while I could certainly speak to this issue of where this is trying to go, I would prefer that I am going to step down just to avoid any appearance of a conflict. So I'm going to turn the gavel over to Mayor Pro Tem Lee. I am going to quickly walk, but I'm not going to go very far, because I know that we've got some other exciting items on our agenda. So with that.
And as a former basketball player, he literally walks from the room. <Hey, there's a blue laughs> So who has any first discussion?
It seems to me that this applies almost solely to Southern California, because we certainly don't have that sort of an issue here, as Mr. Schultz recuses himself, because all of this detail that they supplied showed that we don't have this problem. why we don't.
I would be just as happy to just say no action.
I agree. I've never been to the annual conference, so I guess my general question would be, is that usually if your city's not affected, that would be usually how people do it?
Kind of a silence when they do the big raise of hands type of thing, if I recall correctly.
I don't know was that your question?
Well, I guess my question is, do they want the way we've done it? Is that if we're not directly affected, we don't?
The one that I recall in the past, and Councilmember Wright, you can correct me if I'm wrong, was there was a resolution with regards to medical marijuana, I believe it was, and there was overwhelming support for whatever the recommendation was by the voting members, and yet I think there was two cities that wanted to have the conversation, and so they do allow for, obviously, communication with regards to that, but usually it's minimal. Okay. With regards to the discussion, because typically it's all in favor, aye, all opposed, or no position, and so they call for the three. So then if it's close, I'm not sure what happens. Maybe provides some unknown direction to league staff.
And the way that John could depends on the makeup of the council. Okay. There are some folks who are just really adamant about having a say whether it affects us or not, and then me, that's kind of my approach to something like this. So it really depends on council makeup.
As long as that's an acceptable, way. I just don't want the league to be calling this big meeting and let's say, what if something only affected our ocean? What if only the people on the coast even took a position? Then we wouldn't be useful. So I just, I want it to be a useful mechanism, but I would 100% agree it's appropriate here because we're not even covered by this company, so know that I should be voting on it anyway.
And I'm supportive of a no position as well, with the caveat that I think we, or the league or whoever, runs a risk of as they say, coercing or compelling a private business to do something that would then impact their service area. But again, that doesn't impact us locally because PG&E is already providing this service and this mechanism. So it sounds like we're unanimous in a no position on that one.
Yes.
So with obviously Mayor Scholes abstaining or recusing himself.
Recusing himself.
Which means it will go to Miriam to be at that session.
Or okay. You as the second alternate.
Great. All right.
Moving right along.
I'm going to reconvene the regular Grover Beach City Council meeting for Tuesday, September 8, 2015. I believe when we last concluded with item 9, we are now going to move to item number 10. And this is a status report regarding capital improvement projects. So
council requested that staff prepare and provide to council a regular update on the capital improvement program. We provided the council with the first report in August, and this is, in essence, the second report. As noted when we presented this originally in FY 2016, the CIP outlines 29 different projects. The total funding amount for the CIP expenditures is $9.8 million. As also noted in the first report, staff is continuing to focus resources on the projects that staff has received direction from the county. So we'll go through those now one at a time and then be advise you as to the progress. Please feel free to ask any questions as we proceed.
Very good.
The first project is the Oak Park Rehabilitation Project. As noted on the PowerPoint, the budget for this project is almost $1.7 million. The project is funded primarily from grant funds. It is not being funded with the bond proceeds. Those grant funds were received through the council's efforts at SLOCOG. The RFP for design, first of all, I'd like to remind you again that the project is essentially for the intersection at Grand and Oak Park. And per the council's direction, we've included in the RFP for design extension of the improvements through the intersection. And as the council is aware, to the east, to the Rio Grande City line. The road improvements would extend up and over the hill to the city's northerly city limits, which interestingly enough are just about where Sierra comes in at Oak Park. We are continuing to work with the Rio Grande and Phillips 66. We're hoping that through these from staff, and we are in the process of final negotiations regarding their contribution. As far as I'm aware, that's the only item left outstanding with the encroachment permit. It is my understanding that they expect construction to be underway. Still looking at the end of this month, and construction will probably go through a majority of the fall. If you remember, that's a major transmission line that they're putting in, I think a 12-inch line. It's part of a major transmission line that they're bringing down from Price Canyon and will go through Grover Beach and then extend for our work. The RFP has closed. We expect that the council will receive the recommendation on the consultant for that project at your next meeting, and design should be completed in accordance with the schedule, which has also been attached, and we would expect construction to begin probably in early 2016. Are there any questions on the Oak Park project?
Any questions on the Oak Park project? Mayor Pro Tem Lee?
Thanks for that report, Bob. Just two, maybe three questions. Most of it has to do with the augmentation of the budget with regards to how is their contribution being calculated, and is they're anticipating either the permit issuance and or construction starting at the end of this month, is there a calculation that we're using, or what's the basis for that?
And I'll answer that and then ask the Public Works direct contribution of the cost of what it would be to complete one lane through the entire project length. So they have that information, and they have that specific dollar amount, and we're awaiting response from Phillips 66 as we speak. Greg?
City Manager Paul, I don't believe there's anything to add to that. That's complete.
So I guess from, and just help me with a kind of a picture from a timing standpoint. Let's say Phillips starts their construction, comes through, what would their trench look like? Because I would anticipate if they're going to construct it before us, then our resurfacing, would that be on our project, which they would contribute to restoration, drivable surface look like?
That would be a temporary trench repair, basically. We talked about cold mix, but in our discussions with Phillips 66, it doesn't look like cold mix would necessarily work. Thinking they would most likely slurry back up to near the surface and then put a layer of hot mix asphalt, but a thin layer, which would end up ultimately being removed with the project, unfortunately.
Okay. And then the second question has to do with the augmentation, i.e. the Arroyo Grande contribution. So do you have a time frame for that?
Not specifically at this point, but what we have done is we have allowed as an alternate the completion of in the RFP. The design consultant will actually provide the alternative and a cost estimate for completing that piece between Sierra and El Camino. And then final discussions will be dependent on what that looks like.
And would that be a staff-level contribution discussion, or would that ultimately take council direction?
You know, I'm unclear as to that simply because I don't know where their break is and how much they may have available for street work and how this may fit into a current program that they already have. One of the sources that they've discussed with us, at least at the staff level, is partially using a portion of their half-cent sales tax proceeds that are dedicated to road improvements.
Basically, in the spirit of complete transparency, I was contacted by, someone representing Phillips 66, and they've asked to meet with me on Friday, and I think I've shared that with the city manager. They did not disclose the...
Right.
So there is then a possibility that that little bit from Sierra to El Camino could still be all snotty.
It could be.
Well, that's a drag. Okay. Thank you.
So we sent have them call the city of Pismo Beach. Is that what we need to do? Councilmember Shaw.
No, I have no questions on this right now.
Okay. Let me just add. Let me see. Barbara, did you have any questions? Okay. So I will add to the questions from Mayor Pro Tem. So do we actually have total cost to do the work that of rehabilitating the street from El Camino Real to Grand Avenue? Do we actually have a total?
No, there's an estimate.
Oh, what's the estimate?
About $1.5 million. But it's, you know, it's a budgetary level estimate at this point. The big complexity, I think, really isn't the pavement. We believe we have a unit cost for the pavement, and that's what we provided to Phillips 66. But what we don't have is the cost for all of the ADA ramp improvements, and that's probably a fairly large component of the project.
Okay, and so that estimate has the ADA ramps as well. But just in general, what does the profile look like? What does the section look like? Is it like 6 inches of gravel, 4 inches of asphalt? What's the width generally?
Proposed?
Yes.
Proposed is to mill 8-inch section, and that in some places will go several inches into sand, unfortunately 6 inches into sand. In some cases there's 2 inches over sand. And in other places, that actually won't even mill through the existing asphalt. The sections vary randomly and wildly throughout the entire length. But that mill will provide us the opportunity to then do a cement-treated base throughout Oak Park, and then place about a 4.5 to 5 inch section of asphalt over the top.
Okay, and so I guess I'm assuming that after whatever negotiation with Phillips 66 is complete, if you need to augment the budget, you'd be coming back to the council with a number. Okay, I think the only other thought I have on this one is construction scheduled in early 2016, and I think you know me well enough, Bob, to know that I'm looking for, if not a date specific, a month specific. So I think in our last conversation, we were looking at, I know the RFP is going out obviously on the 21st. We expect to maybe select someone in about 60 days or 45 days. And then I thought we were landing with potentially trying to do some work at the holiday season, knowing that it would not be very
shortly thereafter.
Okay, because I want the community to understand where we're going, and it's done in layman's terms so everyone understands, so that we're all have on the same page with expectation of this roadway. So, okay. Would you like to move on?
Yes. The next project is the street rehabilitation projects, and it includes both of the first two phases. As the combined budget for both of these phases is a little bit more than $4.7 million. As you are aware, phase one is currently under construction. That includes Brighton and from Oak Park to 13th. That includes Nice from 12th to 13th, and that includes South 7th from Grand Avenue to Rockaway. We did conduct the neighborhood meetings. They were well attended, with the exception of the one on South 7th, if I'm not mistaken. And so they're under current construction. The next phase, staff, there may be additional progress at this point. They're on Stantec. The consulting engineer is on schedule with this, and will be the other has to do with the approach that they are using in the construction of the base on several of these streets. So there will be some savings that we're anticipating. Obviously, we won't know exactly what those savings will be until we get a little bit further into the process. But what we're recommending is that we be authorized to complete additional minor maintenance on a limited number of streets. What this will do will have the advantage of completing some of that work early on, and so that additional work in future phases can be focused on those streets that are more deteriorated in nature. When this work is completed, it will complete the first bond sale, and we will expect that this construction, again, the timing of it, it will, Greg, the bids on this are due to, it's due to bid when exactly, and when does that show construction?
October, the bid process will be completed, and construction should be done by summer.
Any questions on that?
In summer of 2016, correct?
2016.
Okay. Any questions?
I had one.
Okay, Mary.
If you could, I love the cost savings aspect. If you could just elaborate on which ramps are going to be eliminated, or how that's going
to. It's a requirement for anything more than minor maintenance to upgrade and make existing ramps accessible, or existing really what it says is to make existing walkways accessible, and the way they interpret that is that you would construct corner ramps. There are a number of streets that don't have sidewalks leading to the corners. And so the design engineer reached out to FHWA for a ruling on that, and they said, well, actually, no, you don't need to construct a ramp if there's no sidewalk leading to the corner. So believe it or not, that's a rather substantial savings in this project. There's a number of corners located throughout this second phase that do not have sidewalks leading to them.
Explain to me how that will look. Like, are you saying there'll be a corner and it will be sidewalked, but it will have no ramp, or it's just going to be a corner?
We're corners where there is no sidewalk now. There will continue to be no sidewalk, and if there's no ramp now, we will not add a ramp.
Okay. So if someday a person puts a sidewalk in, then they would put a ramp in?
That's correct.
In the past, they put in ramps and there was no sidewalks, and it looked like these floating ramps.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that could just deteriorate over time anyway, there so that makes sense.
Karen, you have anything?
Not at this time.
Very good.
So just a couple questions, mostly surrounding the opportunity that the removal
we
or
could,
how would those be chosen?
We could, if that's what the council directs. Greg?
So the design consultant identified the cost savings and also came to us with a recommendation. They looked at the pavement management program and they looked at the aggressive schedule that we're currently under for completion of design on the streets that are receiving heavy rehab. They recommended breaking the project up into two bids under their same budget and time frame. They said they could handle that. And the one bid would be for heavy maintenance, and the other bid would be for the light maintenance. And I should say heavy maintenance is really heavy rehab, heavy rehabilitation, which includes your grinds and overlays and complete replacement. They really are two different kinds of contractors, and so the city would see even additional savings, another 15% savings, because you're not paying a prime contractor, a subconsultant markup for the light maintenance streets. So they identified an amount of cost savings, and they said also within the same budget and same time frame, they would recommend basically picking up all of the streets recommended for light maintenance within the next, I believe it's set up to 7-year period, believe it or not, in the pavement management program. Their thought process being that that's a huge benefit to the city looking forward, because essentially then the next bond project and the bond project following that would be entirely focused on heavy rehab, which would sort of make sense. There's an additional cost savings related to that, and that is that by performing the light maintenance on a number of streets, they don't fall into the more expensive category. So the city really would see multiple savings on top of multiple savings related to the design consultant's recommendation. So the project manager, John Hollenbeck, and myself reviewed the recommendation, and it makes sense. It's something that would be timely and result in quite a few streets getting necessary maintenance. So,
and I like the idea. I like the approach. I guess the concern it's not necessarily a concern, but I know we had some significant discussion with regards to doing a street at a time, a block at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So does the minor maintenance, or does this portion for the next 7 years pick those group of streets? Does it then say, okay, we're going to do a block on Fifth, a block on Long Branch, a block over here, in which case then some of our other discussions with regards to doing not a complete street, but a longer section, does that start to then impact those decisions? I guess is where my question lies on that.
Yeah, so let me jump in there. So how would that affect North 13th Street, which we are looking to do something from Atlantic City to Grand Avenue? How would that affect that?
That wouldn't affect it. North 13th will be done per plan.
In our discussions with this recommendation, they immediately pointed out that although this is a great opportunity, we shouldn't overlook the fact that we're in certain neighborhoods doing major rehabilitation with the project as already approved. And so they said, well, it would really make sense then to complete those neighborhoods. For example, one they pointed out is Lynn Street is being rehabilitated as a result of this project. The remainder of that tract is subject to light maintenance. So that tract could be completed, and we would be done and out of there for 7 years, which would be great, because the impact would be one time, it would be complete, and we'd be gone. So they were looking at that process in making a recommendation to us of which streets in which order. But you can sort of pick the answer out yourself, and it would really follow street projects that have occurred here in the city in the last, say, 15 years. Any street projects that have been done in the last 15 years, where three or four blocks were done in a row, and they look pretty good, but you can see that the aggregate is exposed on that street significantly, and it's starting to crack a little bit. If that was a three or four block project, that's a three or four block light maintenance needed. And so, yeah, you're going to see it being the software recommending a block at a time throughout, but I think you've got a great design consultant here saying, let's try to tie those together to get to have it make sense in context of the existing project.
And perhaps where my, and I thank you for that clarification, I guess where my question on policy direction from the council does is, are, is staff looking for concurrence to say go in that direction, or are you looking to have us say, well, yes, those streets or X streets are, or where's?
I would say that right now it's presenting it as an alternative. If the council agrees with that approach, we'll proceed. If the council wishes us to take a look at using those savings in a different manner, well, we'll take that approach.
Which begs the question, how much savings are we looking at?
So two things. With no schedule impact, we could move forward with the consultants. No schedule or cost impact, we could move forward with the consultants' recommendation. If we chose another path, there would be schedule and cost implications that would be changed. We don't know the exact dollar amount yet, but we think it could be between $500,000 and $700,000 or $800,000.
So which would then...
So
from then, you said the... So basically the light maintenance, that would basically encompass the what the program is saying is the light maintenance with some expansion. So I don't know if we... I guess I'm... Maybe I'm struggling a little bit and someone can help me here. Is would we want... My thought was I'd at least like to see the recommendation and either on next meeting's consent calendar so we know that what we're approaching, or am I going in the wrong direction?
Well, I think you're asking the right questions, and that's all I'm going to give you for now.
I do have other questions.
You still have the floor.
And it's more, and actually Mr. Weissong brought up a great point earlier this evening, which then triggered two other thoughts on my part, is where do we stand in on the trench moratorium? So, it's not necessarily a component specifically of the program, but potential truck route restrictions, which I believe we talked a little bit about earlier, and then where do we stand on the Citizens Oversight Committee?
I'll take the Citizens Oversight Committee. We've been out and advertised for it. It's listed on the website. We have, at this point, one application. Obviously, we're looking for a couple of more. As I recall, the way the council had authorized it, it was up to three for a period of four-year terms.
So we need to get some more interest.
Okay.
That's what I had for the moment.
Very good. Councilmember Nichols, anything?
I think you guys covered just about everything that I was concerned about.
Okay. So let me make sure I understand. As I'm reading your slide, you're saying this minor maintenance on limited streets would be in addition to
yes.
the list.
Right.
Okay. Because, I mean, the example of Lynn Street makes total sense to me if it's in addition to.
And, Mr. Mayor, I also want to point out that recommendation from the consultant is the savings are sufficient. There were a couple of alternate streets you had outlined with this particular street program.
You mean the council, not me.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And we will include, those will be able to be funded.
Okay. Yeah, I just, you know, sorry the hair on the back of my neck stood up, because then I'm sure I missed some of the things, but I just want to make sure that we are moving forward. I think I have something from the city management with your name on this, which lists streets, and I've been talking to the community. So as long as this isn't slowing us down and what we're doing, I think it's worth having that conversation. What I don't want us to do is start overanalyzing everything and get nothing done, because this community is, when they saw the story come out, has said, it's about time. And I'm not going to use an expletive, but it's about time. And I want us to keep moving forward. And I think if this is in addition to, I'm okay with that. I can see Lynn Street and maybe a few other areas, but there's a list that this council has authorized and Mentone, because I know that there have been members in the community that have raised the question of why are we doing Brighton but not North 16th, but that has been identified and it is on the horizon, correct?
That's what the list indicates.
No, there is a third phase that is not, there's not a slide up there, but gotcha. We've identified North 16th to be in the 2016-1
program.
Phase correct, program, right? And so and that would be after the next issuance
yes.
of a bond, right?
Greg,
Yeah, absolutely. We made sure to sequester money for the design of the next bond proceeds. So, you know, as council had indicated, they don't want us waiting. When the money becomes available, we want to go to construction.
Great. So, Mr. Mayor, following with that, what would happen as soon as we get the design completed for what you see there, we'll proceed with the design for 16-1 streets. And in an effort to have those done, by the time you go out for another bond issue, or at least the design done, by the time you go out for another bond issue, which we're talking about completing in March, similar to what we did this
okay.
year.
And Bob, do you anticipate, I know Newport and Long Branch are some major streets, and there's been some ideas bantied about what would be a nice design to either make them low impact back to the council in advance of that, or what's kind of the...
We pretty well have to get pretty consensus from the council as to how to proceed
okay.
On those wide streets.
Okay, very good. All right, so you have...
Yeah, let me take a shot at something and see if this makes sense. I liked the discussion with regards to not slowing down on effectively 2015-1 and 2015-2. It sounds like we may be going towards the direction of adding a 2015-3, which would be the minor maintenance recommendation.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm in support of that. I just kind of want to know which streets...
Good point.
So maybe coming back at
would not know until the consultant has provided that list, correct? So I think that's where they come back.
Yeah, okay. I agree. It would be good to know, because as much as I'm sure they're planning it out and they're using the computer program, sometimes we as citizens who also live here, you know, we've tweaked things here and there, and when we all get together, we think of maybe this block different or that block different, and I think if nothing else, it's good for us to know the specific streets so that when someone mentions it, we know what they're talking about. So,
okay. So it sounds like something definitely want to pursue and explore.
Okay.
But it's a really great idea, and I commend you and them for coming up with that use of funds.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Just to clarify, you know, this wasn't part of their design contract. They didn't propose to do this additional work. But they came back to us, they approached us, and they said, you know, within the original budget and within the original time, we can deliver you this in addition.
Wow.
And I think it's going to be significant when they're done. I think it's really going to have a significant impact.
That's
so,
great.
So since it wasn't in their design, though, we just don't know what all streets. They pointed out a few specific circumstances where it would be very convenient to continue, but they didn't expend any design time because we didn't authorize them to yet.
Okay, makes sense. So yeah, you're right, Jeff. A 2015-3. Okay, nice. We like when we add things. So, City Manager.
Yes, moving on to the transit station expansion project. The budget is as presented last year, last meeting, at almost $2.3 million. Again, this is being provided largely by federal funds, the CMAQ funds, as well as some 1B, Proposition 1B funding is still in the mix. We're in the process of completing the studies necessary for Caltrans to complete the NEPA process. Most lately, that includes the proposals for a flood plain studies. Those have been received. Once those studies are completed, then Caltrans will complete its NEPA process. It is important to note that to expect 6 months for the permitting process, and construction is still on schedule for summer of 2016.
Okay. Any questions on this particular project?
I don't have anything on the train station, but could I ask one more thing about streets? Sorry. Just I wrote down moratorium and the trucks. So what's the process for the moratorium? Do we need to pass?
We need to come back with some legislation to the council that would actually provide a moratorium for trenching over new streets for a period of years. We've discussed that before with the council. We haven't been able to make much progress on that yet, but it is something that, you know, we do recognize needs to be done, because as soon as we get these streets done, we're not going to want to have a utility come in and begin digging them up.
Yeah, and in that same vein, I know you're going to look into the truck issue, but if for some reason, you know, what we have drafted is not working, we need to draft something. We really need to protect these streets now, and maybe it's just that things have gotten lax because we didn't have that grade of streets or something like that, but we need to protect these streets from trucks now. It would be really a shame. So,
Mr. Mayor, unless the council wants to review the truck routes, which have been in place since the circulation element, I believe, was adopted. I think it's more of an issue of maybe enforcement and signage than it is actually looking to change those truck routes. You know, one of the things I would suggest that in talking with the Public Works Director, as we repair streets that are not truck routes at certain appropriate places, maybe we can take a look at adding additional signage now indicating that trucks are prohibited. We can see more of that and coordinate that with an increased in enforcement with the police department as trying to resolve some of that problem.
Yeah, and I would just say to respond to that, I think that is the right approach. That, yeah, we should take a look, but it seems to be more of an enforcement issue, and let's investigate. I mean, I know someone came tonight and made a claim. We still haven't had a chance to investigate, and let's figure out what that is, and then if the council has to take some action, we can take some action in the very near future. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. We were on the train station.
More of a comment than a question.
Okay.
And I love our city manager's optimism with regards to permitting. and unfortunately, They say they have 180 days, but I think we, as a city, should realize that it will take them longer. And so, again, like I love the optimism, but adhering to federal agency timeframes, it's going to lead to disappointment on our part.
Well, I was going to ask the question, 180 days from what date? Was that from the August 28th date? Why is Mr. Buckingham sitting in the back? We need to get him up here and answer some questions.
Mr. Buckingham, can you?
You should know no one's safe from my vision, my field of vision.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. Is that on? You can still hear me?
We can hear you.
The 6 months for permitting was related to the environmental studies. So that did start about a month ago with SWCA. So that's that process. That doesn't include the UP lease or dealing with Caltrans encroachment permits.
Okay.
So actually towards that, is there consultation required through Army Corps and NOAA and U.S. Fisheries? And
so there's two processes going on right now. One is doing the NESMI, Natural Environmental Studies, for the Caltrans, local assistance, gets that information in order to process the NEPA document that they'll be in charge of. And then the consultant has also been engaged with all three potential permitting agencies, the Army Corps, Fish and Wildlife, and the Water Board. So the good news is we've determined now that previously there had been a wetland delineation. There was a wetland on site in 2009. Lo and behold, the wetland delineation was done a few weeks ago. It was sent to the Corps, and they determined that it is no longer a wetland.
Wow.
So there is no Army Corps.
Amazing that happened.
No nationwide Army Corps permit required. Then that was sent to Fish and Wildlife, who decided that they would not take jurisdiction of the site. So there's no stream bed alteration agreement required either. But don't get too excited, because now we're dealing with a regional board and trying to determine if their permit will be required. So we will still stick to the 6 month processing for
I think there's
the permits.
There's reason to be optimistic.
Yeah, so without Army Corps and Fish and Wildlife, there's optimism, yes, I like that.
All right. Excellent. Okay. City Manager.
Moving on to the upgrade to the 2- and 4-inch water mains. As you know, the this is CDBG funded. The amount of the budget is approximately $1.5 million. The streets that will be impacted with the replacement was listed actually in the report. We are in the process. The RFP for the design is out now. We expect that to be completed in the next month, with design in November. We will get the project under construction after it goes to bid during the winter, and we would expect that the completion of the CDBG upgrades will be done by next summer.
And Bob, just to be clear, your second bullet, it's November 2015, not 16?
2015, that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay. Any questions? Yes, Mayor Pro Tem.
Oh.
I'm sorry, no, yes, Karen.
Could you just talk a little bit about what type of construction we're talking about here, what it takes to replace the 2- and 4-inch mains?
I'll ask Greg to review that.
It's really pretty simple. Generally speaking, the two-inch and four-inch mains generally at one end or another are connected to a larger main. So going to that same larger main, we simply make a new connection with a new water line, run that water line the length of the street affected, and connect it to the other end of the water line, keeping whatever portions of the old system alive as necessary, but generally eliminating and cutting off the old main, abandoning it in place, and then all the existing water services are tied over to the new main.
So then that would encompass trenching?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay.
And just by way of addition, we're coordinating again. Our street recommendations to the council are in keeping with, in recognizing that we're trying to get the water lines increased where completed where necessary prior to doing the actual rehabilitation. So that means that, yes, some streets will get done a little bit later than you might otherwise think, but the reason for that is, again, to ensure that the water lines are increased now rather than later.
Right. Thank you.
Okay.
And my question has to do with the RFP process and how we utilize, potentially utilize, Gehring and Taylor. Our city website says that we contract with Gehring and Taylor for sewer and water issues, and I'm wondering, would this not fall into that, or is there requirements in the CDBG funding mechanism that says we thou shalt go out to bid for a private consultant or a consultant rather than using effectively what would be in-house contract staff?
They really make a differentiation, they being CDBG, in terms of the difference between a contractual relationship and an employee relationship. If we had an engineer on site that was actually employed by the city of Grover Beach, they could undertake, obviously, the design. And that those costs would be reimbursed by CDBG. However, the contractual relationship makes that makes it difficult. They are, any contractual work essentially that's going to be paid for by CDBG funds has to be literally bid. And so even though they are currently under contract with us, they could not have performed this work under direct contract at an earlier date or time, let's say.
Hmm. Oh, okay. So that's not going to preclude them from doing an individual RFP or responding to the request for proposals, correct? Or
well, we're working on that. That's an issue that's been raised. I know that they're looking at that RFP very closely, and I think we would like them to propose, but we need to be clear as to avoiding any potential conflict of interest. One of the things that we may need to do is in terms of GTA's relationship as a water and sewer engineer, we may need to review that in terms of their role in today as it existed in the past. For instance, today, they are still performing some operational aspects for us. For instance, they're doing all the testing for our and reporting to state water resources, and they've done that for years. So, you know, staff's aware that we may need to review that contractual relationship and come back to the council maybe with some recommendations for modifications that may ultimately be in the best interest of the city as well as possibly GTA.
Okay. Because I know Mr. Gehring still does a lot on behalf of the city with regards to water issues and so forth. So I agree. I don't know if it's a just kind of clarifying the relationship, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Anything else?
That's what I had.
Okay. So, Bob, then I just, since, you know, and I'm glad we're making really good progress on this, so it begs the question, once we're done replacing these water lines in these various streets, do we need to look into updating the water and even maybe the sewer master plan in some instances?
We need to do that anyway. You know, we understand that those are out of date, and it's a work program that, that we need to undertake. And staff has discussed it. We're going to have to return to council with a discussion as to where we place that in our list of priorities and what funding can be made available to complete it.
Yeah, and I appreciate that because we want to certainly show some discipline. We know we have limited resources and staff is working really hard. We understand that. But having a discussion about if that is where we're going, what may have to come off the list or what may take a back seat. So let's make sure we can have that discussion at the appropriate time. And then I had a question regarding North 16th and South 13th, which actually probably has some water, either water lines or some other infrastructure that would need to be upgraded before we do those streets. But I'm going to hold off on that, and maybe in a future update you can kind of tell us what's the plan to move forward with those and do those improvements prior to those streets coming online for construction. Okay. What else, Bob?
Continuing, the Grover Beach Lodge is here. As indicated, there are a series of CIP projects that will actually need to be completed. We will be officially requesting that the council add these at our first quarter report to the CIP program itself. But those improvements are those that will be necessary to serve the lodge. As you know, the cost for those public improvements are slightly over $5 million and include parking lots, the West Grand Avenue, the West Plaza Park facilities, the movement of the sewer dump station, providing wet and dry utilities to the site. There are a whole number of projects that will need to be completed. We are, as the council is aware, in the process of awaiting, actually at this point, hearing about our grant status from CDBG. We've applied for a $2.1 million grant to assist with paying for this infrastructure. We expect to hear on that grant. It's been in for about 20 days. The review period is about 60 days long. So we expect to hear in a little over a month as to whether we're successful with that grant. And we are also in the process of identifying the funding strategy to come up with the remaining $3.2 million that will be necessary to construct the public improvements. With the approval of the grant, we are expecting to get design of those public improvements underway before the end of the year, and leading to construction probably early next summer.
Okay. Any questions of staff?
A couple of other projects I wanted to identify, bringing on the engineering consultant before the end of the year, and then that engineering consultant will be responsible for making recommendations regarding the rehabilitation of those lots and that parking lot and the costs, and we'll be returning to that to the council as a part of our budget process in the spring. Finally, Grover Beach Broadband Network. During the last report, I indicated that had been somewhat delayed, but that is moving again. It is my understanding that the design is actually pretty much complete. We are in the process of working with Digital West staff in preparing the package that will be necessary to send it out for bidding. And then I would expect that we'll be returning to the council in the next 4 to 6 weeks to authorize going out to bid for the broadband project.
Very good. Any questions of staff on that project? Okay.
I just want to remind the council that there are remaining projects in the CIP. And again, as I've indicated, we are really focusing on the projects mentioned. That means that some of the projects are not as high a priority and are not getting attention right now until we can bring on additional engineering assistance. Completed the first round of interviews with three or four final candidates, and we have a second interview coming up on Friday with one of those candidates, and we will be looking at two or three additional candidates next week. But I'm hopeful that we'll be able to.
Still aren't reopened, and the swings still aren't back. So
I'm not sure about the swings, but the restroom project, the grant part of that project is complete. We are needing to do separate work on the floor in the restrooms, and Greg, when do you expect that to be complete?
I don't have a completion date yet. I would say it's going to be very soon. We're moving as rapidly as we can to get the contractor on board. We're just having difficulty getting all the information we need from him at this point, but we've selected a contractor essentially, and we're moving forward. Again, these things take time, but probably 2 to 3 weeks to get started, and then it's about a week-long process.
Because I know our focus is elsewhere, but that's a huge inconvenience not having that. I know there's porta-potties there, but and if this Bob mentioned the trend is moving away from swings, if the swings aren't coming back, that park's going to look a little.
Format, the bullet, and there's a lot of work going on. Like I said before, I know everyone's working very working hard, and thanks for covering the resources. What I will do on this particular item, since there are still a couple members of the public that are, or the community that are here, see if anyone wanted to make comment on any item that we've just discussed. So I'm opening this up to the public. Anyone? John, you want to come forward?
Tommy, what's up? Taxpayer paid for this. I just don't grasp it all. But I don't understand why you can't take that TV back there and every Friday say something about what you've done, what you've accomplished, where you're going. I think that taxpayers deserve, I know I do.
Okay.
And let us know what's going on. Like the water one. I've had problems, you know, since 2012. So, project man came by and he told me they were going to put the line across me and my railroad. Well, I don't understand why you put a line across there from her side to my side. Mine's the old one. I don't ever remember that line going through there. But that pipeline's going to be open where mine was half full of junk. You watch. That water meter is going to change. I don't care what you say. I've been around enough meters in my life. We're going to have another problem. But I don't understand why you would change that water and bring that meter out to the curb now. That does not make sense, because that wasn't what I heard, or that wasn't what we voted on.
Okay.
So that needs to be put on every Friday. Let us know.
We got your comment. Thank you. Regular updates. Anyone else? I think Ms. Brown. Oh, we have a new microphone runner. Nice.
Thank you. Actually, this is a very positive comment rather than negative questions. I like the idea of using the savings to complete neighborhoods on the low maintenance. And this is not because I live on Lynn Street.
I didn't know if you were going to disclose that or not, but go ahead.
Yes. I'm not quite sure, and the consultant, for coming up with this idea. And anytime we can do that, let's do it. It makes good sense, but it also is a good PR thing. People are able to see that things are actually happening in their neighborhoods.
Very good. Seeing no one else come forward, I'm going to close this to the public, come back to the council. And this is just a receive and follow the report. Bob, thank you. And I think these regular updates are really helping. So let's move on. Let's see. We don't have any pooled consent item agendas tonight. And let's quickly move through our council committee reports. Miriam, you got anything?
Just a brief update from Visit San Luis Obispo County. Just letting everyone know all the new dollars at work that will be coming from the Tourism Marketing District. Audi commercial filmed at the Oceano Dunes very soon. And Audi, yeah. And also, the new head of Visit San Luis Obispo County has been forging for a while a really good relationship with Visit California. So I don't know if you've seen those commercials of California's for Dreamers, but Morro Bay is going to be in one of those commercials because a woman there is a professional bubble artist, and she's going to be making big bubbles in front of the rock. So you'll see that for a second. So that was pretty cool. And
actually, before you leave, Visit Slow, or if you're...
Yeah, oh, no, okay. Go ahead.
It actually has to do with the filming in the area. I know there was talk at one point about trying to have one consistent film application or film permit throughout the county. Is that still on the discussion?
Yes,
block?
They had an initial meeting, which I wasn't able to go to, about trying to get everybody's regulations together, and we did input what we have is regulation in our town, which we don't have much. Other towns have more. I know AG actually has quite a bit. So they're going to try to put that all back together and then have another meeting to make, yes, they want to have a unified filming laws and restrictions type thing so that they can get more people in here filming. So and the other thing, of course, that we've been working on is Savor, which the Savor Food Festival is coming up at the end of the month, the weekend of September 26th. And I've been working with Kathy Petker in Parks and Rec, and I've been the idea person, and she's been the actually doing it person. And we're getting there with a lot of ideas for a booth. We're just waiting to hear back from vendors. So we'll see how that goes. And some good ideas about putting together one sheet with a bunch of different Grover Beach businesses giving discounts so that people could business that might be interested in offering such a discount, if they could let Kathy know, it would be a lot of publicity. And I think that was all of my, and of course, yeah, the only thing that I've had as far as Chamber of Commerce was the Stone Soup Music Festival, and I think we all attended that, and it was great, so.
Perfect. Karen, you have anything?
I do not. Upcoming, both APCD and Zone 3, so.
Very good. Jeff?
So no meetings since we last met, but because the EVC, or Economic Vitality, was dark in August. But I do have an Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting tomorrow, and that is going to conflict with our JPA meeting for the lodge. And I would attend the JPA, except for the fact that due to the passing of Supervisor Hill's mother, myself as vice chair will be acting as chair
for
the lodge meeting. So I kind of can't miss that one. But I'll be there at
gotcha.
The other meeting in spirit.
Okay. Barbara?
CAPS and recognition all across the nation for the way we had started performing in California. I have a South County Transit meeting on Wednesday, on Friday afternoon. And the RAC is also back in session after taking a 2-month sabbatical. And the water situation is still dire.
Wow. There you go. Consistent. Okay. So for me, let's see, on September 2nd, had a Regional Transit Authority meeting, and there really was not a whole lot affecting Grover Beach from that meeting. I know that there was some discussion regarding updating the 5-year short-range transit plan, so there will be possibly some suggestions that might affect South County Transit. It used to be SCAT. I'm not sure when they dropped the area out of that, but as I learn more about that, I will report to you. And I know that there was one situation in which Mr. Straub reported out about strained relationships between the RTA and the South County Transit. I'm not sure if that's with the employees or if it's a combination of employee and board members. So, but they are going to work to improve those. So I'm sure we look forward to hearing that update. So I did express my continue to coordinate with those two because obviously they're so interrelated. Five Cities Fire Authority, I believe there's a meeting coming up on the 18th. I know Barbara covered that, and I think you guys may have discussed goals and maybe a workshop and
yes.
On that one, right?
No specific action taken, but we're going to, I think, use a facilitator to help.
That would be great.
Prioritize the goals. And
okay. So then I'm looking for my notes on South County Sanitation District. Ah, here we go. So there was also a meeting on September 2nd. So you can imagine my day on the 2nd started in the morning with the Regional Transit Authority and ended with the South County Sanitation District. Yet again, a well-attended meeting. A lot of folks who have discussed that. We discussed the timing and permitting. And it comes with a price tag of just a little shy of $19 million. A lot of that would be funded with a grant, but the board did authorize moving forward on that. There was a lot of discussion regarding not so much the validity of the project, but the permitting of the project, given that it is in the Coastal Commission and whether it is in a area of original jurisdiction and what, in fact, that might be required of that, because I think Mr. Rickenbach had estimated it, that it could be would be a, I believe he said, a conditional CDP, a coastal development permit, and also said that it was not, I guess their initial findings, that it is not in an appealable area by the Coastal Commission, but the project could be appealed from the Planning Commission to the Board of Supervisors. So as the details start to emerge on that, I'll keep you updated. Mr. Knutson, who is doing the management review audit, I'm sure many of you have heard about that. You may have heard about it on the community. You may have read about it on CalCoast News. This was a he had come back, and I think the original proposal was for 50. This has really become a huge point of contention and a very emotional issue with respect to Oceanos continues to say that their cost to do the billing, which means sending out the billing, collecting, and distributing those funds is $22,000. I think Grover comes back in at $20,000, and Aurora Grandy is still working off of a dollar amount per meter that was set originally. So in order to get away from all of this emotion on that so that we can focus on the more important things, that was the direction that was given by the board. So expect to see that coming back. The fourth thing that was done is Mr. Sweet, who had come in as a district administrator, who was formerly with the City of Santa Maria as a utilities director, and who came up and signed a contract to help with that at 12 hours per week. I believe it was definitely a situation in which the amount of work, the demands given by the board and individuals, I think really, really stressed and taxed that 12 hours and challenged that. And so he has decided to resign the position, and I believe his last day is Friday. Mr. Clemens offered to fill the gap, gave his resume, role of an administrator that deals with not only budgets, but board members and preparation of agendas is different than being a plant superintendent. So we're looking at that as a short-term solution. The board did, in fact, authorize going out and hiring a headhunter to help with the recruitment of a full-time district administrator because there is a lot of work on the books. So this authority or this agency continues to be very busy, and I'm hoping that as we move forward that board members will start to exercise some discipline and that we can start to make some progress and move forward. But proof's in the pudding. I'll let you know how that goes. I think the next meeting is coming up on
PG&E.
That is very good news.
And we've got our Dropbox and opened it this morning, and somebody used it to deposit donated books.
Wow.
Most of which were garbage can quality, unfortunately. But we got our drop stretched out.
Anyone else?
Well, Jeff and I were at the Grover Beach Car Show this past weekend. It was a huge success. My son has asked every day since to go back, and so this will be a long year. And I won two gift baskets in the raffle, so I'm happy. And also, I found out this weekend about a Grover Beach business that I did not know about called Locked In. Where? I did not know about this. They will lock you in for 60 minutes, and you have to, like, figure out the puzzles and the codes to get out. Team building, guys, because my husband refuses to go. So I'm looking.
I think this is team building, don't you think? I think you're locked in for 4 years.
And then we can challenge all the other city councils and see if they
can
beat our time.
Wow. Oh, my. That scares me a little bit. Jeff, you have anything?
I do have a couple things. One of which is a follow-up on the Dune Run. As we were going through, I did hear a couple members of the Parks and Rec Commission say, oh, next year Parks and Rec should challenge the city council to see how many people can finish and have a little team competition there. So notwithstanding all of our knees falling apart, that might be something to consider. And then also kind of coerce the planning commission and maybe the traffic commission to join us as well and have as many commissions as possible to support the race. So then moving on to Empty Bowls, which is an event coming up on behalf of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition on September 24th. The location has escaped me. I'll bring the location back.
Senora Grande, St. Pat's.
St. Pat's.
Yeah, okay, St. Pat's.
Thank you. Right. Thank you for reminding me of that. 11 to 3, I believe it is.
Yes.
Let's see. Next is, and I know I'll probably steal the mayor's thunder on this.
What do you have?
You can expand upon it with regards to the fact that there's the 9/11 memorial event coming up this weekend. If you want to see a fire chief in uniform. And honoring those who have participated and lost their lives during that. And then moving on to a kind of a tongue-in-cheek comment with regards to signage. And I was going to kind of put a plug in for the asking our community development director when our sign ordinance is. Now's the time. I've also been getting a number of questions from the community with regards, and this would be for the police chief, regarding synthetic weed, and then for the council, whether we want to have a discussion about an ordinance prohibiting that or some level of discussion there, and then also medical marijuana with regards to how that action is moving through the legislation as well. So I don't know if there's a desire by the council to bring that forward.
Let's talk about it next council meeting. I think I was sitting here trying to show some discipline, but I understand it's an issue that the community keeps bringing up. So at some point we will have to have that discussion. Okay. So I have three things, maybe four. I think several of the council members touched on. We had a very productive and positive meeting, joint meeting with the Park, Recs, and Beautification Commission. So it was really good to talk about roles and responsibilities, to discuss ideas of how we can be communicating better, and we also gave them information on some of the projects that we discussed tonight. So I would say, moving forward, we will want to do that with our planning commission. I think that would be a good thing to do. And I know one of the things that came out of that meeting was to have, did we talk about, not quarterly, but
two
meetings a year. That's correct. I don't have all of my notes. But I'm also thinking that on a team building front, maybe we should think of a nice little retreat with our advisory bodies, because, you know, they are truly volunteers. You know, while we get the big bucks up here, they are serving under committees and they get $0. And so I think going forward, we can have that conversation. The second thing is, I had met with Judith Bean of the Chamber of Commerce just to kind of do a check-in. And one of the things that had come out of that is, I have been receiving comments from a lot of folks in the community with respect to the merger of the two chambers. And I want to make sure everybody understands that was not a city decision. That is a business owner's decision. And they are an autonomous group, and we support them in whatever manner we can. So one of the things that we were talking about is having a greater presence of the chamber back in Grover Beach. And there was some discussion about what it would be the possibility of utilizing the old chamber building, which is across the street from City Hall, and maybe when the time is appropriate, we should have a conversation and figure out what are there some options to pursue something like that. Because I think there also, if that is in fact a discussion, then maybe there are some upgrades at City Hall that we need to discuss. And in particular, I know that there has been some discussion about, so we can do that. And then also possibly looking at security fencing over near the fire station on 7th Street. We have some very, I think there's some very expensive equipment, and it's an area that is not easily delineated from what is public, what is private, and what is secure. So we can have some discussion on that. Finally, I want to say on behalf of myself and my family, thank you to everyone for the well wishes during my time away and my medical procedure that I had on August 10th. I just want to say I was moved, and I really felt the support of everyone. The flowers were beautiful. The cards and the calls were just what I needed to lift my spirits, and it's great to be back with everyone. And so thank you all for that. So I think at this point, we'll see if the city manager has anything he wants to update us on.
Mr. Mayor, members of the county, in the evening, and it will be held as it has in the past at the Ramona Garden Center.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Bob. Ms. Brown, you already have.
Are you just about ready to adjourn?
I was actually going to my city attorney because what? Hold on. Hey, Bob. You stop there. Hang on a second. we're out of order. We're out of order. Is that? I want to go to city attorney. Do you have anything?
I don't have any reports this evening.
Okay. And the other city attorney, the city attorney, the assistant city attorney. Now that he showed up.
Well, Mayor, council members, good evening. Just very briefly, want to let you know, I will be attending the CJPIA conference that's coming up in 2 weeks, I think. So if any of you have any interest in any of the particular subject matters or topics, let me know.
Very good.
And I'll make sure that I cover those and get you something back.
Sounds good. Always good to see you.
Great to be here. Different perspective.
Very good. All right, I'm going to break from protocol tonight. And let me go to the public really quick, because I think we only have one member. Ms. Brown?
Okay. Well, the only thing I wanted to say was I am hoping to see all five of you a week from Saturday from 9 to 11 at Grover Beach near Finn's is where...
Can I say one more thing before we adjourn?
Sure.
Friday is a also a fun run at Grover Heights Elementary. It's their big fundraiser for the year. And Grover Heights Elementary is going to be on KSBY with their fun run.
How far is the fun run?
Well, the first graders are doing 30 laps, so it's going to be 2 miles for a first graders.
I was going to say I could do 4.
Oh, we need volunteers, so don't even say you're going to come because we'll find you.
All right. Again, you know, a very productive meeting, everyone. Thank you for your time. I think we got a lot done today, and staff appreciate it. We do have a closed session that we're going to go into, and so Assistant City Attorney. I know now that he's showing up, I got to call you your assistant. So,
Council, we're going to convene in closed session for the following 3 items: conference with real property negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8 related to the.
Very good. And with that, we are going to recess in a closed session.